WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
I'm Natalie Moore in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. We're listening to Your Love from the acclaimed vocalist Liz Wright.
When I think of your sweetness, the love that brought me here.
It's the latest single off her upcoming album, Shadow, which comes out on April 12th. The new work features five mesmerizing originals, as well as covers of songs by Cole Porter, Julian Welch, and many others. The collection is tied together with acoustic guitar, orchestral strings, and of course, Liz's beautifully smooth vocals. I sat down with the acclaimed singer to talk about her latest work. She starts with how it feels to have her album drop in just a few weeks.
Oh, gosh. It's wonderful. Trying to make sure I got everything available, all the merch and everything. But the real fun part has happened already, which was, you know, just recording it. This is the first time I got to record in my hometown. So I went to my friend Ryan Freeland's studio, just there in Lincoln Park, got in my truck, went 20 minutes across town and just had a great time. And so this just record feels very close to home in lots of ways.
I want to talk a little bit about grief, if that's okay, which
sure.
inspired parts of Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
You lost your grandmother, and in the description of the album, you said she, quote, gave you the backbone to stand and sing in front of rooms and strangers and never feel alone. She sounds like a wonderful woman, and you called her a defining love in your life. Tell us more about who she was.
My grandmother, Martha, is just one of those really beautiful, quiet, but epic matriarchs of the family. And of the community, of her community, you know, there in southern Georgia, right above the Florida state line. She just walked in so much love and grace. She was very funny, very discerning of people. And her sense of discernment was always based on love. She always wanted to find something to love about you immediately. You could be a little kid. You could be, you know, someone working with my grandfather on a construction site. It's just, you know, anyone. She really took everybody in one at a time. And the way she carried herself was just made me feel really comfortable as a child. And then as I, you know, became an adult, I realized how rare it is the way she carries herself through the world. And she just doesn't fear anybody. You know, people just can't come masked in front of her. She just walks with so much love and humility and humor. It just wasn't possible. So I've had so many really funny experiences that have led to, you know, all kinds of writing and poetry and themes in my life. And, you know, I just really let myself in this state of grief, you know, saying goodbye. She had like stages of dementia kind of set in, but it was really a long arc of departure. And watching her communicate with us and still care for all of us, like this massive family, in these little spouts of awareness, she was a rock star. She said all kinds of incredible things, and she made us laugh, and she gave us things to remember. And I'm just the one that sings and writes about it, but this happened to all of us and my whole family.
Let's listen to some more music. This song is called Root of Mercy.
I remember she had a tree, an oak down Thompson Lane. would kneel and pray there till she rose. Glory, leaning limbs and sweeping moss.
Can you talk about the oak tree in this song?
Yeah, my my grandmother lived at the end of a set of long dirt roads in South Georgia, and you know, they run alongside corn and soy and cotton fields, and then there's also like this beautiful you know, kind of ditches, and then there's these big lattice of shadows from old trees. And I remember, you know, once you get to the straight dirt road right before her house, you know, there would be these oak trees lining both sides of the road, kind of swampy, like wild land behind one side and like a beautiful orchard behind the other side of these great trees. And on these trees would grow Spanish moss. It always looked like an old woman's hair, you know. So just, you know, somewhere between my father, like reading a lot of beautiful stories to me and reading me Shakespeare's plays as a kid, but also like, you know, like Uncle Remus stories and just all kind of really funny stories where he changed voices and he talked about lore of the South and, you know, he made us laugh. He scared us sometimes. Her house had this great enchanted energy, and it still does to this day. And, you know, seeing this beautiful moss hang over the road, all these shadows, but this place that would in some ways look really creepy and ghostly led to her, you know, the person whose presence made me fear nothing. And so just thinking about all the experiences I've had, you know, in the garden and just hanging out with her in town with her friends, you know, bopping around in the pickup truck, you know, just all these beautiful impressions of like of her and the family in the South. And then I heard in particular from my aunts and uncles about how she went through a really hard time with my paternal grandfather, who I never met, passed. She was raising all these children, a single mother at like a really crazy time and deep in the South. And she was in such a desperate state. And sometimes the only place to go to really be alone and find some kind of solace was up the road. And that they found her a couple of times, like, you know, kneeling and laying in front of this oak tree in front of the ditch, because no one would pass there for hours. And that sometimes that's where she actually prayed. And so this image stayed in my head. You know, the place already was like one of my favorite places to be in the world, and reminded me of stories that I heard. But then this image of her praying at the tree, and then her position in the family also, this all began to kind of come together in these years, as the years have gone by and as I watch her on her way, you know. So this is, you know, I'm just really celebrating and trying to find a way to say thank you and release all of it. But yeah, she was really something.
It's a beautiful tribute.
Thank you.
Your artistry is multifaceted. You sing, you write, but you also are in the culinary world. Tell us about Carver 47.
Yes. Monica Haslip at Little Black Pearl is a really, she's very dear to me, obviously, but like she's a very gifted designer. And she, you know, as we became friends now almost 8 years ago, she said that she was working with the Kellogg Foundation on this like truth and racial healing project. And she wanted to explore some of the themes that she adopted from that practice to infuse them in her community development work. You know, she already had Little Black Pearl, the school and community center. But she's like, I think I want to open a place inside of here where I can bring people together and they'll get past their kind of assumptions about each other, and that the diversity that's also happening to like on the South Side and in Hyde Park, I want to embrace it and like kind of usher it in, you know, by bringing people together with like a high quality experience. Then we talked further about like the kind of food offerings that like weren't as readily available on that part of town or in that corridor. And I still remember that conversation. And you know, we ended up also talking about, she really led the way in this conversation about trying to figure out how to illuminate the history of a Black American icon through the design of this place. And she's like, maybe somebody like Dr. George Washington Carver, you know, the botanist. So we started, you know, pulling out things about his history, and we had such a ball, and realized that, you know, we could design a menu and a whole, like, culture around him. And what I especially love is that, you know, this was a Black American who, in time, was born in slavery times, you know, was enduring this, and still had a relationship with the earth that was not oppressive. It was one of wonder, of discovery, of transcendence. And I was like, oh my gosh, I think he's the right icon. So we have just really been enjoying this project. Chicago is an amazing place to do anything in food because, like, this is such a wide open cultural, like, you know, just like slow cooked stew of a place with so much great history, so many Southern transplants. So this is our seventh year, I think, being open, and you know, it's a lot of food cooked from scratch, a lot of things fresh, and you also walk into an installation of fresh flowers every time you come in, because I'm a former New Yorker. You got to have flowers with your sandwich.
Well, I love Carver 47 on 47th Street, folks, between Greenwood and Ellis. And I've been in there when you've been in there, and I have not fangirled when I saw you. I'm like, this is so amazing. But does the... How does the culinary influence work? Is it on your music, or does your music influence the culinary?
It's really both. It's taken me years to learn that I'm on a mission to recreate, you know, the beauty of my childhood, because my father grew a lot of our food in the backyard. You know, then he would take us to church where he was the pastor, and he would give away a lot of food, you know, also from the garden. And what my dad could grow in a quarter acre was just stunning. Like, now that I realize what a gardener he really is and has been all my life, it's really staggering what he's been able to do. And so, you know, I was always singing in church and, like, teaching, cleaning, whatever. It was like running a little farm, I guess. And I think I'm trying to bring all that balance back to my life now, because that's what brings me joy, like nurturing, you know, and being in communion with the earth through the food. And through the music. So I'm really thankful for my, like, really beautiful, remarkable team at Carver, because, like, they let me go on tour. I come back. Everybody's loved. The neighbors are good. You know, I can just jump back in and, like, make a, you know, a cloud of flour and join them, you know. But they really, you know, they anchor what I'm doing. And because I'm still touring and writing music, you know, I have something now that can grow at home that I don't damage. You know, it's not like a little sweet child. It's, you know, my puppies forgive me. But yeah, this is nice to have something to nurture. And I love knowing my neighbors. That's just the best thing.
Do you ever do a playlist with food pairing?
Ooh, that's a fantastic idea. No,
okay,
I should
well,
do it.
Let us know when you do it so we can come and partake. But it's time for some more music. Here's I Concentrate on You.
Whenever skies look gray to me and trouble begins to brew, whenever the winter winds become too strong, I concentrate on you.
This is a Cole Porter song written in the 1940s. What stood out to you about this song, and why include it on the album?
Oh gosh, Natalie, I have loved this song for so long, and been looking for any excuse to sing it. But in putting this record together, which, you know, when I make records, I try to look at them like long essays. You know, I'm exploring some kind of theme or moment or feeling from several different angles. And so, you know, initially this record was going to be called like Valley of the Shadow or Eclipse or something, you know. And so I thought, oh my gosh, within this context, Cole Porter's song is even more cinematic than usual. It's like, you know, here is how I can move through such an experience, you know, and of being in a valley or being in some kind of engulfing emotional experience. So yeah, for me, it was really a fun way as an interpreter of song to just illuminate the lyrics in a different way, you know. But Cole Porter is an amazing writer. I really love his work, and this has been one of my favorite songs for a long time.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Let's talk about your record label, Blues and Greens. This is your debut album on your new label. What was happening in the music industry that led you to want to start your own label?
Well, a lot of us artists, I was just reading about my friend Lettucey in the paper in the green room. You know, we've been around for 20 years. You know, I have been recording and touring for 20 years now. And you start to learn what everybody's doing and what it really takes for them to move your career forward and get you on stages and get you in front of people, get your product in stores. And you know, after a while, it's very natural that you become kind of the producer of your career. You start to see which individuals you want to kind of curate for your team and keep close to you. And these relationships are natural. You know, they form on their own. And then, you know, within those, I find the courage to figure out how to express my intentions in both music, like I do with my band, but now with my team, my intentions in business. And it's all creative work. So I'm really thankful. I mean, there are rules, but also the blessed thing about where technology is going, where media is going, what the pandemic did for us, to us, is that, you know, everybody's kind of becoming a curator of their own anyway. So there's a lot more opportunity to say who you are in the, you know, art world and in business now, because everybody's trying to figure out how to customize their offering and their statement. So I think it's just a good climate for this. But for me, it gives me just that little bit of extra room to be more intentional with what I'm doing.
On the website, you have a quote that says, "The mission of Blues and Greens Records is to restore basic humanity to the music business with wellness and sustainable business practices at the forefront." Can you expand a little bit more on that?
Sure. I've recently, you know, learned a lot about what's happening to some of our icons in music and the arts, how they finish out their careers, how they're touring, you know, and just, for instance, I think, you know, someone mentioned to me, like, oh, yeah, here's, you know, Roberta Flack is here, this nursing home, like, just by herself. Or, you know, this journalist found this unmarked grave of this great jazz icon, you know, trumpeter, like, or, you know, someone said that Sly Stone was living in a van and that he was homeless and that there's this couple that gives him a meal a day. And I'm like, you have to be kidding me. You know, this is really, you know, I mean, obviously we are all as individuals responsible for ourselves, but when people have given to culture and to like marking human history in this great way, they've given their lives to it, they really need to be taken care of. You know, like, I think a lot about how my friends on big and small levels, you know, obviously I'm referring to life planning and retirement planning and just general kind of wellness and a holistic approach to having a career. But even the small things of, like, you know, when you're on tour, you know, Are you able to find juices? Are you able to find a masseuse? Are you able to find a photographer? Do you need, like, you know, what kind of services do you need? So what's really great is that, you know, a lot of artists are figuring out what to do to take care of themselves. But sometimes we just need to communicate with each other to figure out how to find different resources in different places. You know, here's a good place to eat. Here's a place to rest. Here's a place to go to, like, compose or, like, just be in nature and kind of just, you know, gather yourself. So I really want to number one, you know, really become a resource to my community of musicians especially, but really folks in visual arts too, to be able to find resources in different places. But I also want to encourage us to have better understanding of our agreements, to redesign them. You know, I challenge my legal team a lot to turn my intentions into, you know, legal lingo, because like I know what I want to do and I know I'm fair, you know. But I know that some of this just doesn't come up because we don't talk about it. We don't explore. We don't ask questions. And then on a very simple, like practical day-to-day basis, when some of my friends and colleagues are coming into town, they're playing these theaters and halls. I'm like, do you need a care package for you and the band? I have fresh juices. I got sage. I got Palo Santo. I got chocolate. I got cookies. What do you need? Sandwiches, soup. Like, and I'll just drop something off in the tour bus or bring it, you know, bring it myself, like, and take it backstage. But I just, I had a fan in the Netherlands who cared for me in this way every time I came in the area. And she would bring me like teas and chocolates and, you know, all kinds of little affirmation cards and things. And what that meant to me over the years was just that I was seen. It was always stuff that I could travel with. So even in this small way, you know, she's a part of the inspiration. And I just love my community, and I love what artists, you know, are always trying to find and what they're sacrificing, and how generous their whole lives become. And I think we need to treat them like family, you know. So this is really what I'm thinking about, all of the things that need to happen off the stage and out of the studio, like to keep these careers and these persons behind them more sustained.
Angelique Kidjo and Michelle Indegui Ocello are on this new album. How did you come to work with them?
They're both dear friends of many years now. And I remember Angelique and I got close after I left culinary school, actually, in New York in 2009. I went right to the Nina Simone tribute tour with Angelique and Diane Reeves and Simone Kelly, Nina's daughter, and with parts of Nina Simone's old band. So I went from like taking tests every week and like cooking and, you know, trying to survive culinary school straight to this great gig with these amazing singers. And they're actually both incredible cooks, Diane and Angelique, by the way. So we were, for the next couple of years, on and off, you know, this tribute tour about Nina Simone. So I had time to really, really fellowship with them and learn a lot. And, you know, they're just global influences. They have so much to say. They're super bright. And we had so much fun. So she is very much a sister to me. And Michelle, I have known also since very early in my career. One of the first female musicians that I spent time in the studio with, who, you know, writing and in pre-production years ago, and just got a sense of what it's like to really be an authority in music as a woman, you know, as a female, or, you know, however we identify. It was just beautiful to see Michelle's freedom. So I'm really thankful she's on this record. I wanted to do a duet with her initially, but she couldn't. And then I didn't ask her to do this bass part. She just sent it, and we were totally overwhelmed. So I'm really glad she's on this record.
When your debut album, Salt, came out in 2003, I heard you on an interview on NPR, and I immediately bought the album, and that's when I became a Liz Wright fan. Gospel is always present in your jazz. You talked a little bit about your father being a pastor and singing in the church, but can you talk some more about your childhood musical influences?
Yes. So much of the influence is really like storytelling too. As I mentioned earlier, my father had a book of you know, Shakespeare's plays, and he read them. He sounded crazy, but he was so passionate. It's like when you're a kid, you accept whatever your parents give you. You know, it's like they're your whole world. So I got Shakespeare's plays read to me. I got great stories read to me. And then I would go to the church and I'd hear the old mother sing in these call and response songs, which are really structured just like the blues. It sounds all the same. You know, once I left home in the church, I heard the blues and I was like, I've heard all those changes before. I've heard that those repeating lines before. Like, what do you mean that's the blues? That's how the mothers sang. So, you know, the church is really this remarkably generous, you know, institution without a plaque, you know, for music and culture in America. And it's really been such a great source of information and such a great place for American history to be told and protected, you know. And it's so many artists have come from, you know, the church tradition. So I'm just really grateful for how deep those roots go. And honestly, on the emotional side of it, it's so nice to get in front of an audience and not be overly worried about what they think and just, you know, go into the moment to like give thanks or explore your feelings, or like it's very meditative, the act of performing. But I think that opportunity to practice it as that experience really came from the church. You know, you go up there and they're like, you're talking to the Lord. Don't worry about nobody. That notion just stayed with me.
Okay, so when can Chicagoans hear you live with this new album?
Well, I will be at a place called Space in Evanston on April 28th to celebrate the release of Shadow. So it's a great listening room, and they also make their pizza from scratch. It's delicious.
Culinary and music, what more could you ask for? That's Liz Wright, acclaimed vocalist and songwriter. Her new album, Shadow, is out next month. Thanks for coming in, Liz.
It's my pleasure.
Let's go out on one more song. This is Sparrow.
Sweet Sparrow, I miss your song.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Ethan Schwab. Come back to the Reset Podcast every Saturday for interviews with great musicians from Chicago and beyond. I'm Natalie Moore, and for Sasha Ann Simons, who will be back on Monday. Thanks for listening.
When you're done with trouble, find your I know the wind is rising, throwing everything, tears, clouds, and ashes, make it hard to sing. I'll be your refuge. Come into my arms.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely.